And today we welcome from F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company, we have professional forester and the lands and resource manager, Cameron Wolschlegel. Hi, Cameron.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Did we do the name right? Wolschlegel.
Wolschlegel, yeah. Okay.
Did you have a nickname growing up? The Wolf or something like that?
No, just Cameron.
You're beefy enough. They probably didn't want to take a shot. So anyway, very interesting. I have friends that work at Stoltz. So.
Oh, yeah. We've been around a long time.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that history.
Yeah, for sure. So as you both know, this community has a huge history in timber management. And our founder, F.H. Stoltz, came out in the 1890s, followed the Great Northern Railroad. And from Minnesota, and set up in Summers and Kyla area, and formed F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber in 1912. So we've been in business over 100 years in this valley, and been managing timber since.
Okay, you mentioned Summers. Was that because they used to float the logs over there, or were they involved in the railroad tie manufacturing?
Yeah, they followed the Great Northern Railroad, and they did use some log flumes and such, but mostly the river drives were up north of here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But we're the oldest family-owned sawmill in Montana.
Wow.
And currently employ 125 direct employees, so we've came a long ways. We've been on our current site just north of the Blue Moon up in Columbia Falls for over 100 years, since 1919.
You guys are kind of settled in then.
Yeah, we've been there a long time. It's changed a few times, burned down a couple times, but since the 1950s, we've been pretty much as is.
Yeah. So we're talking about, what, 38,000 acres?
38,000 plus acres. It changes a little bit every year. We acquired about 1,200 acres last year and sold a couple hundred, and that kind of fluctuates.
Yeah.
As you guys said, I'm the lands and resource manager. I'm in charge of all our company land contracts, sourcing log supply for the mill. Our resource team's composed of three foresters who manage our property, private timber lands in the Flathead Valley, and also oversee contracts with the Forest Service, DNRC.
Need you closer to the mic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And the Good Neighbor Authority. So, yeah, we purchase a lot of local wood from the community.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now you mentioned the number of employees. How many was that again?
Right now it's 125 direct employees.
Okay, so what about the contribution to the local economy? You're employing folks.
Yeah, our company spends over $34 million a year. And last year was $34 million, but that fluctuates as well, up to $35 million a year into our local economy.
Wow.
So now your world is in forest management, right?
Yeah, it seems to be more in people these days, but that's part of the equation.
But the idea is to manage the forest, and we hear a lot about that, both in politics and when it comes to wildfires and all that stuff. And I think that understanding what forest management really is something that eludes most of us.
Yeah, for sure. You see all the wildfires in the news, and our local management on the ground is super important, you know, for the wildland-urban interface, to get in there and treat those fuels. You guys have had Allie on in the past, and it's really important to be out there, and our mills provide the equipment, and you know, there's foresters, industry foresters, state foresters, consulting foresters that can help people manage their property to reduce those fuels on the landscape, keep their forest healthy, and, you know, in turn provide products that our local mills can turn into, you know, and provide jobs for people.
Let's kind of dig a little deeper into that right after this. We're talking about forest management from a guy who knows a lot about it, F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Professional Forester and Lands and Resource Manager, Cameron Wolschlegel. Okay, so Cameron, talk with us a little bit about what forest management really is. I'm not sure I understand what you mean by it.
Sure. So at F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber, forest management to us is doing the right thing for the trees and kind of thinking about the whole landscape picture. So just to set the stage a little bit for you, our lands are all certified through the American Tree Farm System. And the American tree farm system, we've been in there since 1966, has four pillars: wood, water, recreation, and wildlife. So we have a set of stewardship principles when we manage our property that we think about when we're harvesting timber. So, you know, you've all, you know, the clear cuts of the past, well, we don't do that anymore. We're doing selective forestry for purposes and objectives. Now, on our lands, I said we're certified through American Tree Farm System. We're trying to do cuts that provide best tree management. So we're looking at the fire-adapted species like larch and ponderosa pine, white pine, and trying to leave those trees on the landscape to seed in the next generation of trees. What we have today is a result of our history in the forest. You see a lot more Douglas fir than there traditionally would be, grand fir, alpen fir, and those trees just are short-lived trees that are more susceptible to fire, insects, and disease. And they're all between 90 and 120 years old right now, and a lot of our management is going in and removing those whitewoods, we call them. So fir and larch, they're like a redwood, like heart color. And the alpen fir, lodgepole spruce, they're all what we call whitewoods. So just that's forester slang.
But, yeah. Okay. Hey, but, and I was going to ask, as far as the forestry goes and where you might be yielding, we've learned that some of these prescribed burns are to create a gap where winds might be blowing and a wildfire can kick up. We've become a lot more sensitive to that over the last few years. Does that come into play as far as where you're harvesting also?
So if you were looking up towards Whitefish last week, you probably saw the prescribed burns up by Big Mountain. That right. was above our property in Haskell Basin.
Okay.
And that was in conjunction with a wild... the Whitefish Watershed Municipal Project that was a Forest Service timber sale above our property to mitigate fuels to okay. protect the watershed. And so the Forest Service conducted that prescribed burn and, you know, in effect, it burned the fuels that have accumulated over 100 years. So if a fire does start, it has a buffer. So yeah. It can't travel downhill into the watershed.
Oh, excellent.
Whitefish gets 80% of its water supply from that watershed. And Haskell Basin is a great example of multiple-use forestry. It's in conservation easement since 2016. And so that land is going to stay in timberlands in perpetuity. The community has access to recreate on it, and a lot of people hiking and biking on the Whitefish Trail, etc. You know, they're driving or recreating through stands that have been managed 3 or 4 times, and a lot of people don't even realize that. We go in every 20 years and pick a little here, pick a little there, and do that best tree management that I was talking about.
I want to go back to what you started talking about and the different species of trees.
Sure.
And how you determine which ones come in and which ones stay.
Yeah, so when we're dealing with like private landowners or company lands, we've got a set of objectives and we're looking at the history of this landscape, and there's fire adapted species, you know, the western larch, the ponderosa pine, the white pine, and they're not as prevalent in our forests as they used to be. Well, the railroad used larch's ties. Ponderosa pine was huge around here. They use that for a lot of different things. And then the white pine got diseased and pretty much died out of our forest naturally. It was also logged intensively as well. So we're promoting those species to bring it back to what it was. Mm-hmm. And
now the western larch, that's the one that changes color.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now I have a bunch of ponderosas on the property where I live. How thick is that bark around them? It looks like it must be like armor.
Oh, it can be extremely thick, and that's what makes them fireproof, is them and larch have extremely thick bark, and so when the fires naturally came through, it cleaned out the understory of those whitewoods I was talking about, the grand fir, spruce, alpen fir. They're all shade tolerance. They grow through the understory.
Right.
But in the past, when those larch and ponderosa pine were removed from the overstory, those other trees grew up and replaced them. Mm-hmm. And so now we have those mature trees that historically were usually taken out every 20 to 40 years.
So you selectively prune through those trees then?
So those are the trees we target for removal, and our mill is able to turn them into products. Yeah. So
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now the products.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that after this.
Yeah, we're talking this morning with Land and Resource Manager Cameron Wolfschlegel. He's with F.H. Soltz, a professional forester. And we appreciate it. I'd just like to salute you for being such a good citizen, recreation. Everybody appreciates the access that they've had with Soltz. Now, what are some of the products generated?
Yeah, so our mill's really high tech. It may look old from the outside, but inside we've been upgrading as we go. And we produce over 700 products from the locally sourced timber we have here in the valley. Most of it's boards, the 1-inch and dimensional lumber, 2x4, 2x6 that everyone traditionally hears. We can take logs down to a 4.5-inch top, so we get a lot of utilization out of our timber products here in Montana. One cool thing about the timber we grow in this area is it takes a long time to grow, but it's super strong. So we're able to turn that. We have an MSR machine, which is machine stress rated. And that tests the rigidity of these dimensional pieces going through our planer. And it's a separate sort. And they're used for structural building applications like trusses, for example. And so this very strong lumber we grow here is, it takes a long time to get there, but we can make some money off of it by sending it to the prairie states, for example.
Okay. Well, and with that rating, they know exactly what they're getting.
Yeah, for sure. Our mill also manufactures lumber from every species of softwood except cedar. So we use Doug fir, larch, alpen fir, hemlock, grand fir, spruce, lodgepole. We use about 8,000 loads of logs a year, and we produce 75 million board feet. And we're certified through Sustainable Forest Initiative, SFI, and we have a fiber sourcing certificate through them, which means we responsibly supply our mill, and we're audited on that every year.
Okay. Now, is any of the wood, does it end up in paper products or no?
So we have some mill residuals and like chips, sawdust, bark, shavings, and they're all, you know, just from making that dimensional or the board.
Okay.
And we sell some of that to Columbia Falls Weyerhaeuser.
Okay.
For medium density fiber board.
Okay. Now, I just wonder, because we had that toilet paper shortage, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, I wondered if we had local sourcing for that.
No, so, but one really cool thing we do with our mill residuals is we burn them in our cogeneration facility and produce electricity for the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forgot about that. That is...
How about medium-density fiberboard?
Yep, that's what I was getting at with Weyerhaeuser. Okay. We sell those mill residuals to make the MDF.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, because that's a neat thing. You can do a lot of cool stuff with that.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, now what about Soltz Timber Systems? What's that all about?
Yeah, that's our new up-and-coming venture. We have a lot of small-diameter wood in our forest that poses a... It needs management, but it's hard to commercially get the value out of it and get it out of the woods right now because there's no facilities to turn it into a viable product.
Okay, what are we talking about here? Like lodgepole pine?
It's a variety of species, but what we're talking about is taking those trees that are smaller diameter, about 5 inches in, at average diameter, at breast height. That's what foresters say, DBH, to a 3-inch top, so smaller than our mill can use now, and milling them down into 1x1s, 1x2s, and gluing them all together to make large panels. So we're going to take small wood and make big panels. So we're trying to give that wood more value because that's what our landscape needs to get them fuels out of the wildland-urban interface. And there's just a lot of it out there. And right now it's a loss for us to take it out of the woods, but it's something that's responsible and
that's
what needs to be done.
What about stuff that's littering along the forest floor, stuff that's just laying there and rotting?
Yeah, that can definitely pose a fire hazard, and it accumulates over the years. And when we're actively managing a forest, we treat that. So a lot of times we call it post-harvest work. We'll pile additional slash. There's a slash hazard law in Montana, which means you can only have so many tons per acre of branches downed wood, etc. And so sometimes we'll hand pile it, take an excavator in there, make little piles all over the place. And that effectively reduces those fuels and burns down through the duff just enough to get to that bare mineral soil, and which is essential to get new trees growing. So after a fire, you guys see up the North Fork, for example, that carpet lodge pole that came in after the fire. Well, we replicate that in our forest harvest practices by making little piles of that, you know, post-logging slash and downed woody debris. Mm-hmm. And we burn that and create those scarification spots and effectively get the new generation started.
All right. My question to you, how'd you learn all this stuff?
Well, I could say that I went to college and, you know, we all have bachelor's degree at Stoltz in forest and natural resource management, but a lot of it's being on the ground. I grew up in forestry back east. My family owns a maple syrup farm. And I was a forester back there before I moved to Montana 10 years ago. And, you know, then I was a logger, and we were in the recession when I graduated school. So I gotta say it's a partial education, partial experience, and just learning from the guys out on the ground. We've got a lot of great loggers and contractors out here who have been doing it for 40 years, and they're extremely knowledgeable. And the industry as a whole is just totally professional out here. It's awesome.
This has really been a cool conversation. Yeah, I've learned more about this in 15 minutes than I've known in my entire life.
Next time, schedule me for an hour.
Man, what a great conversation. Cameron Wolfschlegel, we sure appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.